Ayo, and here we go. We Talk Comics number 77. We Talk Comics goes boom. Bo will be joining us in a little bit, but today we have Brett. Brett, what's your favorite Boom comic book?
My favorite Boom comic book would actually have to be Deathmatch by Paul Jenkins. And Paul Jenkins is an awesome guy.
Keith, same question.
I'm going to have to go with Planet of the Apes Cataclysm. I love me some talking apes, and what they're doing on Cataclysm is so cool. They blew up the moon in the first issue. It only gets more exciting from that.
And I'm Chris, and I don't have a favorite Boom comic book, so it's probably a bad question to ask.
It could also be Grace Randolph's Superbia, though.
Yes, I like that one, but I'm not putting it on any favorite list.
It's not your favorite out of the one that you can think of at present.
That is exactly correct.
We've provided you three titles. You just have to choose one of them as your favorite. We're not going to come back and hold you to this later. If later you say, hey, that's probably my favorite Boom book. Like, no, that's not at all what you said on episode 77, Continuity Hounds. Clearly in episode 77, Chris established that Superbia was his favorite comic.
No, you know what? I'm not taking any chances. I'm going to remain mute on this one because I know you guys. You'll throw it back at me if I say anything. But let's go on with the news. Of course, sponsored by the best website on the net for news,
Comicosity. Comicosity.com.
Comicosity.com.
It is the only news website for comics that does not give two craps about movie or TV news. It is 100% comics.
It's kind of refreshing that way, isn't it?
It's awesome. No toys, no movies, no TV. Let's just talk
just comic books. That's the right attitude to take. And Keith, how about giving us some news?
Okay, well, a light news week. We are just ahead of Free Comic Book Day. I'm just pitching this in the middle of the show. Maybe we should do reviews next week of some of the free comics.
That sounds a fine plan.
We'll do a little feature next week. I'll be at Alpha Comics for Free Comic Day. Free Comic Book Day is also my birthday. Alpha Comics is having signings. They've got Scott Kowalczyk's going to be there, who's got a free comic coming out on Free Comic Day.
And Ryan Ferrier and Ben Reichel will be there tweeting it, live tweeting it.
They will be live tweeting. And I hope to run into the guys. I have to be there early because then I'm going to see Iron Man 3. I'm having a whole day. The universe has conspired to make it a perfect birthday for me.
Better because you're old.
We have seen a... I am. You're only as old as you feel, and that's about 172. We've got a teaser for Valiant Winter 2013. One word, Unity. What do you guys think? Flashbacks?
Chills up my spine because the first time they did Unity wasn't a great success.
This time... great. They're going to get it right. That should be the tagline.
It sure looked pretty, though. That Barry Windsor-Smith art. It was a terrible story, yeah.
But pretty.
Just darn. Was that ever reprinted? Is there a trade of Unity?
I feel like there is. I feel like I've seen it. It doesn't necessarily mean that it's easily available.
Hmm. So much of the Valiant stuff was poorly put out in trade.
Yeah, I feel like
a trade of half of it, or
I feel like it might be half on newsprint.
Oh, well, they've been reprinting a lot of their older stuff. I'm looking forward to. They've just announced some more trades. They'll have some more of the early Windsor Smith stuff. The Eternal Warrior issues he did are just about to be collected. So, I love the stuff he did at Valiant. I have the Archer and Armstrong hardcover already.
They should just do an omnibus of all of his work for Valiant.
They should just do an omnibus of all of his work.
That sounds a fine
one
plan.
One volume. Get IDW on. IDW can get on that. Yep, the complete that sounds, works of very rich.
Sounds right up their alley.
Yeah. And no oversized pages for young gods.
That whole thing could be run in an absolute. Speaking of Valiant, the Quantum and Woody cover for number one will have a variant of a speaking cover, the same as the Exo Man of War did. It will be a QR code talking goat, as voiced by Sheldon Lee. I don't know who that is, but it's a talking goat on a cover of comic. What do you want?
Who needs more?
If it's talking not goat. George Clooney, I don't need a talking cover.
Learning whole new things about you there. George Clooney, I'm not sure, quite specific.
Are you talking about... cast as a talking goat?
Probably not Sheldon like Lee,
Clooney,
but...
I just said, if I'm casting a talking goat, George Clooney's my first call.
I think that's the kind of thing Matt Damon could pull off. And we've got a...
I think Phil LaMarr could pull it off, too.
Last week we got a teaser image and no hints yet as to where this is going to turn up, but Kenneth Rocafort, who is currently drawing the Superman book with Scott LaBelle, DC has released a new design for Cyborg Superman, designed by Rocafort. So presumably it'll be showing up in either Superman or Action. LaBelle is doing a fill-in on Action, so maybe we're going to see a big story this fall. Or maybe this is the villain month issue.
You know, the problem with Cyborg Superman was never the look. I always thought he looked cool. The problem was characterization, so hopefully they go in a different direction this time. Never a fan of the character. But he looked cool. But they're changing that now.
I quite like the new design on this. I am a Cyborg Superman fan. I always liked that character. You know, got a bit overused once they started making him basically a Green Lantern villain late on. But the stuff they did early on with him and his the death and the Return of Superman issues that he was in, really dug those. So we'll see. This could be the first of our of the still rumored villain month characters. And as I said, this is a light news week, and that's the news.
All right, let's get Mo back in here.
So what are we up to here then? No, we're talking about the Calgary Comic Book and Entertainment Expo. The experiences we had.
Yep.
Brett, your experiences. What were they?
Well, in this case with the expo, let's see now. Lots of different things that we did. You know, we managed to talk to Bryce Carlson, managing editor of Boom Studios. We chatted with Grace Randolph, of course, creator of Superbia. Let's see now. We talked to Paul Jenkins. Paul Jenkins was very funny. I had a few minutes with Phil LaMarr, so that was good. You know, Keith and I got our picture taken with Walter Koenig, which, it wasn't so much an experience as just a picture. And he almost cracked a smile. Would you say that, Keith? Almost?
He came so darn close.
So darn close.
But he smiled after the photo, so, you know, that was okay. Your words are making the expo come alive for our lives.
Oh, I know they are. I know they are.
Hardly. Let's get to some freaking stories. How about this, Brett? What happened when you're in the washroom and with your son, Tristan, who we were there with on Sunday?
Well, in this case, I was holding the door closed because he was having trouble closing the latch. So I'm just standing there, holding the door closed on the stall, twiddling around with my phone, and I hear this, "I sure hope that's your son in there." And I'm like, yes, it is. And then I'm like, wait a minute now, I know that voice. And I turn around and look, and it's Walter Koenig who's just talking to me. So I'm like, awesome, you know, I just had a moment, you know.
You know, some of the best moments people have when they meet celebrities are in washrooms. But there's one guy who had a celebrity moment this week. It wasn't any of us, but that we heard about in the bathroom that none of us are going to be topping for any length of time. Brett, well, the security guard told us a little story.
Absolutely. I mean, he was a funny security guard anyway. So, I mean, he had a lot of great stories. But this one was the best. It was the end of, the end of Saturday? And we were itching to leave because we were pretty damn tired. And there we are talking to
And we had to take Boom out for soup, for dinner.
That's right. Or for drinks. Yeah. And so anyways, we were there and he told us this story about how earlier in the day he had to quarantine a bathroom for Stan Lee. And so he had to go into the bathroom and say, "Everybody, get out of the bathroom. Stan Lee's got to come in here. Everybody out, everybody out." And there was one guy who was in a stall, using the stall. And he said, "I can't leave right now." And the security guard said, "Well, then you better be quiet and not leave until after Stan is done." And so, anyways, he stayed in there the whole time, apparently. And then he told the security guard, he used stall number 3.
Yes. So Brett, and of course, went to use the washroom. And did you take a picture of stall number 3, Stanley's personal bathroom?
Actually, I didn't take a picture, but I said that, you know, people sure look at you funny when you go to take a picture of a bathroom stall.
Well, yeah. Stanley, you know who else had a great story? We had a great story about Stanley's daughter. Keith, can you at all do this one justice?
No.
I don't know that anybody other...
No, remember how we said we weren't going to do this on the show because we couldn't do it justice?
Yeah. I know, but at the time we were hoping to interview Holly, and since we didn't get that interview, I thought, what the hell? Somebody had a run-in with Stanley's daughter who thinks she's a superstar, too. Maybe we'll get the story sometime.
I'm going to tell about the 10 minutes that I made it into the Neil Adams panel. So... Sunday morning, I've gone to a panel. My buddies at the Correctness had put on the Superhero Smackdown. I got my times mixed up. I thought I had to run from that one to the Boom How to Get Into Comics panel. And it was actually an hour between. So I run into this room. I look at the sign. I'm like, there it says Boom on the wall. Okay, I go in and I see Neil Adams at the front of the room. I'm like, ah, frick. This is the Neil Adams panel. Okay, now I'm already inside. The panel's just starting, so like, I'll sit down and I guess I'll listen to Neil Adams talk. Which, you know, let's hear a comic book legend talk about his work. And then I hear 5 minutes of Neil Adams talking about his son, who's sitting right there, as if he wasn't sitting right there. The reason he's talking about his son like this is because he has stopped the moderator, insulted the way the moderator has been introducing them, and is reintroducing his son so that the audience really understands how important his son is. And then...
Is that pride, Keith?
No, I wouldn't call it pride. No, because he ends with, "And that's how you should be moderating this panel. Speak like that so that everyone can hear you clearly." So they open the floor to questions, and the first person to stand up is... this 15-year-old boy. He's in a costume, like some kind of... It's a video game character costume, so I don't know what it was. And he's very nervous, and he kind of stumbles through the first question at any one of these panels. "How did you get into comics? Because I'd really like to draw comics when I get older and stuff. And how did you start?" Et cetera, et cetera. Neil Adams says, "Well, the first thing you have to do is learn how to speak the English language."
Oh, jerk.
And then the boy stumbles a bit more, and Neil Adams says, "Here, just repeat after me, how did you get your start in comics?" And the boy says, "Well, you know, because I'd like to get into comics." "No, no. Say after me, how did you get your start in comics?" And then the boy, not even... trying to just move on from the horror that's happening, just finishes his question and then Neil Adams starts, which, and then he gets, and then he gets to the next question, which is about the internet and digital comics, where he basically says that artists have nothing to do with the new forms of digital comics. Those are all done for them after they do art, and then he starts talking about how he makes money off the videos of his Expanding Earth theory, which was when I was done with the panel.
So here's what I want to say. Number one, obviously this guy's a douche. We've had him on the show in the past. He didn't come across too friendly there. We know a story of a friend of ours who was an artist who attempted to show, who went in to fix his copier machine and ended up trying to show him his art and being, what was it he said to him? I don't care about your art, just fix my damn copier. If a man is judged by how he treats those people who can do nothing for him, Neil Adams isn't being judged too well. Now, that said, if you believe or don't believe any of this, I do have to tell you guys, you can see that Neil Adams panel. You can see all the panels on Flip TV. I'm not telling you this because we're making anything from it. Just because they're only $10, you can see all the panels. I think that's pretty cool because there's a lot of cool stuff that did happen this weekend, including the douchery of Neil Adams. Keith, any other stories? I can tell you about a comic.
Well, I'm going to tell you about a comic, but... Was there any comic that made an impression on you, Mo, at the show?
Well, it was unbelievable. I was walking down this one aisle, and out of nowhere, I looked to my left. I saw this comic book. I saw this guy, just normal-looking guy, you know, nice-looking young man, except for the tattoos that made him look really tough. So he's this nice-looking young man with all these tattoos, and I look over to him on the left there, and I see, I'm like, holy crap! Your book has a tiger? And that tiger's also a lawyer? Holy crap on a stick. I start screaming to people in the aisle, come here, everybody. This is the coolest book at the convention. He's got a book with a tiger who's also a lawyer. I may have said this just randomly walking by hallways and different places really loudly multiple times this weekend.
There was an occurrence on Saturday night where I was... We're, of course, talking about Ryan Ferrier's fantastic book, Tiger Lawyer, Calgary writer. And he had issue 3 debuted at the Calgary Expo.
Well, not only this, I want to say this, just to give it a little more context. The mayor of Calgary actually had an interview with Comic Canuck on Comic Book Therapy. And at the time, he asked him, because he's a comic book fan, he was at the convention, the mayor, Mayor Nenshi. And Nenshi, how do I say his name?
Nenshi.
Thank you, Nenshi. As soon as I said Nishi, I thought I screwed that up. But anyways, Comic Canuck gave him some books to hold up for the picture, and he looked at that one book and went, hold on, this book's about a tiger who's also a lawyer? That's where I got it from the mayor of Calgary. You didn't know that?
I didn't know that part. That's awesome.
I got it from.
So Saturday night, I am in the longest line of the entire show that I've been in. I'm waiting to do my photo op with the Boondock Saints. Sean Patrick Flannery could only make it to Saturday and Sunday, so they had to combine up all the photo ops. I was waiting over an hour for this photo op, but I had promised my wife I would get a photo of myself with Norman Reedus. So I'm waiting, and Mo texts me, like, look to your left. And I look over, and about 50 feet away, there's Mo, and he waves at me. I'm like, okay. And then he yells, there's no one else, there's like only our lineup left. So there's 50 feet of empty space. And Mo yells, we're going to be outside. Okay, Mo. Hey, I was just inside at the artist alley, and I saw that there's this comic about a tiger who's also a lawyer. And I shout back at Mo, that's not a thing. And Mo's like, no, it's a thing, it's a comic about a tiger who's a lawyer. Then Mo goes outside, and I hear to the people right behind me and the people just to the right of me say, a tiger who's a lawyer, that's going to... they were quite engaged all of a sudden. They were like, oh, no, they're talking about a tiger and a lawyer.
Well, man, we could have sold copies at that moment.
Well, he could have, and there was points where I'd be walking by his booth and go, holy crap, I can't believe how cool that is. You have a comic with a tiger who's also a lawyer? And then people would go, oh, my nerd self needs to check this out. And he'd get a pile of people running up to him. I'd give him a big thumbs up and back away. I like doing it, though, when he has people already at his booth and going, holy crap, those people are looking at tigers. So I did that. I did that when Ben Rankle, who you'll remember from our comic book stomach, and his girlfriend Fiona Staples, artist of of Saga, who's also friends with Ryan, when they were standing there, and I pointed out to them, you guys have a book in your hands right now that's a tiger, also a lawyer. I would walk by Fiona's booth and yell it. Ben would yell to me things like, are you sure it isn't a panda that's a panda or that's into plumbing? I'd go, no. A tiger. This is also a lawyer.
I think we missed a great book there, Panda Plumber. I would have loved to read
about
that
kangaroo
book.
A kangaroo that was an accountant.
Not as good as Panda Plumber.
A marsupial and a number crunching would make an exciting book.
I've already pitched Ryan on a spinoff of a leopard who's also a patent attorney.
Oh, good idea. I heard about a wolf who's also a cop.
Yeah, we saw as we're walking out, I see this flyer for Wolf Cop, and I say, Mo, Wolf Cop, rip off.
Awesome. Oh, so much fun. So much fun. Ryan had a good show, though. I like that you sent out a tweet with the Comic Book Expo. Hey, I'm walking around the Comic Book Expo. What was it you said?
I said, I just keep hearing over and over about this comic about a tiger who's a lawyer. Everywhere I go. And then the expo retweeted that.
That's great.
Yeah, I think we need royalties from
No quest. I just hope him great success. Great success for Ryan. It's a tremendous book, and he's a good dude. Keith, Brett, you got more stories? I got more stories. You got more stories?
I got another story about a local artist, Chris Peterson, who did the art on Ultra Nova, which we reviewed last week on the show. Chris has a book coming from Dark Horse, written by Alex Campy. So we'll be talking to Chris pretty soon here on the show in the next few weeks. So he went to the Drink and Draw event on Saturday night. A lot of the local guys went. And Eric Larson went to that and hung out with the guys all night. And so Chris was working on a commission that for a Walking Dead. It was a Walking Dead blank cover that, you know, you get an artist to do a sketch on the cover for you. So he was doing one of those like big motorbike and crazy zombie stuff. And when he was working on it, someone spilled a drink on the comic. And it's commissioned, so he's like puts it aside. He kind of mostly made it through the figure and had barely started the bike. Had to start again. And as he's working on it, the comic like mostly dries off, so it's all wrinkly. Eric Larson fucks it up and says, well, yeah, it's almost done. He's like, well, no, I just kind of sketched in like a little bit the bike. So Larson pencils the bike and gives it back to Chris to ink it. So I see Chris on Sunday morning. He's finishing the one that's actually going to the person who got the commission, and what he's got sitting on a little stand on his table is the artwork that he and Eric Larson created the night before. All wrinkly.
Brett, you got a story? You want to talk about Paul Jacobs or something else?
Well, actually, you know, I was thinking about the lovely gentleman, Jim Zubkovich. We got a chance to talk to him for a while. And he was a great guy. Anyways, you know, I was kind of interested in the fact that especially when you bought volume 2 and 3 of Skull Kickers, and next to him, who was, let's see now, he had Ray Fox next to him, and who
Adam
else
Warren.
Was it? Adam Warren.
Adam Warren.
And that they had supposed to be having tidbits in the trade paperbacks, and so he's like, hey, you should get these guys to sign this too. And then Adam Warren just kept looking at the book, flipping through every book that he could find. I don't know. I don't know where my stuff is supposed to be. It's not in here. I can't find it.
He's like, is it in that other trade paperback? I'm like, well, he said number two. I give him number three. He's like, it's not in here either. And yes, it was.
It just got to a point where I was just thinking, just sign every book that, it doesn't matter, whatever, just sign all the damn books, you know. And Keith, you wound up just buying number two just so you could get the extra signatures, I think, hey?
I bought one and two, yeah, so that I could get the, so I got the other guys to sign it. Yeah, that was a great sales pitch. The guy on the, Ray Fox on my right and the other guy on my left, both worked on the book, so if you buy it from me, you get three signatures without walking anywhere. That's a great sales pitch.
And he also threw us a couple extra issues of Skull Kickers there, a couple of the newest ones, and made us promise to review them on the podcast. So I guess we'll have to talk some more Skull Kickers and have Zub on her as a guest in the near future.
And he was chatting up the final number one before they resume regular numbering, which... they settled on the title Dark Skull Kickers Dark.
That's an awesome title.
I love the titles. Those titles are awesome anyways. But
what is this? It's Uncanny Skull Kickers this month?
Uncanny Skull Kickers, I think, was this month, yeah. Yeah, it's good stuff. He's a good dude. Very, very outgoing. I liked listening to him talking to some of the other small press guys, and I'd be eavesdropping and be listening in on him. So I won't repeat what he said because it wasn't meant for me, but I was eavesdropping. You know, just creeping. That's what I do. Brett, tell us a little about Paul Jenkins, though.
Well, Paul Jenkins was honestly nothing like I expected, I gotta tell you. Like, Alan Grant, when we saw Alan Grant, he was everything like I expected. You know, just grizzled and looks like he'd been run over by a car 16,000 times. Just, you know, oh, where's Alan Grant? Oh, he's out getting a smoke. That's Alan Grant. And so
saying to the guy, goes, he's out getting a smoke. And I said, yeah, he's British, right? He's like, yep.
And so I half expected Paul Jenkins to be in the same thing, yeah. And then
he's also British, and he wrote for Vertigo. Yeah. He wrote a bunch of dark, even his stuff for like Marvel is dark. And
so you see him, and he's just this nice, you know, clean cut, you know, California tan kind of guy. And man, oh man, is he ever happy to chat you up. He asked if we'd ever read Deathmatch, which was, you know, I had read it, and he actually gave us a couple of stories about, you know, what could happen in Deathmatch, which we probably shouldn't tell anybody about, because I'm not sure, because I don't think he thought that he should be telling us, but...
Well, he did say, I shouldn't tell you this, is kind of a spoiler, but, and then told us.
Yeah, but the thing about Paul Jenkins that stuck with me the most is on Sunday, I had my son there, and so I had taken my son to the booth, you know, two booths, and besides the fact that Boom was absolutely kind enough to give him a free copy of the Calgary Expo variant of Adventure Time, which was an absolutely awesome gesture and very nice on their part. I was getting a couple of things signed by Paul Jenkins, and he asked about you know, my son and how he was doing, and then they proceeded to talk about the video game Skylanders for the next 10 minutes. And it was just amazing to watch them just go back and forth, and just, you know, for Paul Jenkins to just, you know, talk to a five-year-old like that and have this fantastic conversation and tell him, you know.
He wasn't talking down to him at all. He was talking on his level and just, it was, and he knew everything about Skylanders. It's the same thing the day before, you'll remember, Brett, really late in the day we stopped by to say hi to him as well, because we had talked to him quite a bit on Friday. And he's sitting there going, guys, I got to show you what I got. And he pulls out a bunch of Pokemon. And he's like, this one especially, I'll be the hero to my kid. My kid is seven. And I've been looking at this at every single convention. He's been looking at it for years. This is his favorite, and it's rare, and I can't find it, and I found it here. And he's showing us all the different Pokemon and telling us how much his son loves it. And you're just like, this is just a good dude who's a good father, you know? And like I say, not, you know, you have the image that he's going to be Warren Ellis, you know, or Alan Moore, you know. He's just like,
those are great guys. I haven't met them, but I'm sure they're great guys.
I'm don't sure be talking, they are, but...
Don't talk crap about Warren Ellis, man.
I'm not talking crap. I'm just saying there's an image
Brett's
there.
Brett's met Warren Ellis. Is he a nice guy?
He's quiet. I think Warren Ellis is definitely not the outgoing type. I'm fairly sure that if I plunked a 5-year-old in front of Warren Ellis, they're not going to talk Skylanders for 10 minutes.
But no. if you plop a beer and a smoke in front of them, I'm sure the results will be equally as entertaining as a 5-year-old.
Well, yes, just not for a 5-year-old audience, that's for sure.
I especially liked when we were sitting in Casper Van Diem's and Dina Meyer's booth after they left, Brett, and your son said, "My cat sometimes sits on my head and smells my ear, puts his nose in my ear, then he can smell my brain." So you, of course, took that question, "What does your brain smell like?" and used it on Phil Lamar. We'll have the answer later. That was good stuff. I also like when he took the picture with Carrie Fisher and Ian McDiarmid. They asked him a question. What did they say to him? Are you light side or dark side?
No, that's what they asked. That's what they asked me.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah, Carrie Fisher asked if you know, who was on the cool side and who was on the dark side, and my son typically prefers the dark side of things. So I thought, well, that would be better. He'll like the fact that he gets to stand in front of the Emperor, and then I got to hold Carrie Fisher's hand, and then they took the picture. And I look at it at the end, and he's frowning in the picture, and I'm like, "What the hell?" And then he's like, and I'm like, "Why are you frowning in the picture?" He's like, "Because I'm a bad guy. I'm part of the dark side." Okay, well, now it makes sense.
I love the text I got from Brett seconds after that that said, "I just held Carrie Fisher's hand. Bucket list, check."
Yes. Paul Jenkins did tell us a little bit about his experiences with DC and Marvel, and particularly DC and why it is he's worked with Boom. I'm not going to get into it too much because we're hoping to have a chance to talk to him in the future because he is so outgoing. And I think ask him 3 questions and he'll talk for an hour, which is better than Stephen Grant, who was also there. Ask him 2 questions, he'll talk for an hour.
But I think it might be an hour and a half.
He's the other one there. He was there, of course, selling 2 guns, which somehow when we were doing the movie trailers last week, the upcoming movie in August with my fault, when we're reading out the list, I accidentally skipped that one, 2 Guns, the Denzel Washington and Mark Wahlberg project for August that looks really, really good. But anyways, Paul Jenkins
Before you go on, let's drop in there. That's one of our scoops from the convention. Stephen Grant told us the title sequels to 2 Guns. He's already working on sequels because the film is out this summer. 3 Guns, 4 Guns, and Last Gun Standing. He did tell me that there will be no prequel just called Gun. He was quite adamant on that.
Well, I have plenty of stories with him, but... Because, I mean, like I said, I just asked him a question, and he went off. It was all over the place, but it was tremendous. Paul Jenkins talked a little bit about, he said basically, he mentioned that if you had a story, for instance, where you were going to cut off the Flash's legs and talk about the human drama of how would the fastest man on Earth deal with the fact they no longer had legs, DC won't let you do it, even if it's going to be a good story. DC will just give you no creativity. He had creativity in Marvel 12 years ago when they're in bankruptcy and their sales are so low. But nowadays, with the Marvel, there's little creativity, and there's even less with DC that are on you so tight. So even though he's part of the New 52, and I think it was Legends of the Dark Knight he was writing. Is that correct? When New DC 52 launched?
Dark Knight. Just Dark Knight is what it was.
Just Dark Knight, sorry. So Dark Knight, he was writing that. He wrote another one, but he just said that he basically told him to lose his number because he couldn't work with the editorial there. And so we'll have him on hopefully in the future to talk a little more about it. As he said he would. So I'd be happy to say that on a podcast. Stephen Grant, on the hand, told me a bunch of stuff. He's not sure he would say on the podcast, just basically. Of course, he was the writer of Punisher, when Punisher was the hottest character arguably on the planet, and kind of how for 10 years he pitched that. He told me a little bit about, he told me just about Denzel Washington and how interesting it is to watch him work on the set, just about how he does different, every single take is different, and how you could see Mark Wahlberg was really learning from him. He talked about he talked a little bit about Nick Fury, how Nick Fury is a character that's very sellable nowadays, but for many years he wasn't. So he spent years pitching that they should have Nick Fury versus S.H.I.E.L.D. because how else do you take take Nick Fury and make him an underdog if he's part of the most powerful organization? Eventually that project went to somebody else, though, he said. But he did say he also thinks he should get more credit for helping create the anti-hero character, which is funny because he told me he always thought the Punisher was a villain and that he wrote him that way as well. So, you know, a lot of really interesting stuff from a guy 35 years of the industry. I can't even repeat it all, but I basically ask him a question and he just goes off. But maybe my favorite quote, and this one is a little graphic and in nature. This is where the F-bomb that inevitably comes out of comic convention comes, folks, because he said people were complaining to him that Two Guns, that the trailer gave away too much, and he said, but everybody says that gets at least one plot point wrong. And I said, well, nowadays the trailers don't give away much. I mean, I didn't like the first trailer for Superman. I liked the second one, but I still have no idea what the story is. He goes, oh, I think I know what the story is for Superman. Let me see if I got this correct. I'm an alien. I got all the powers in the world. My home is cold. This planet's a fucking hellhole. I'm out of here. I think he did get the plot for Superman, for the Man of Steel. I guess not Superman Returns, the Man of Steel. So, anyways, Stephen Grant, very, very interesting fellow. Anybody else have anything to say about Stephen Grant or anything else at Boom? How about Grace Randolph, Keith? What was your interaction there?
That was a lot of fun. Grace was on the show about a year ago when Superbia first started. We reviewed Superbia number one. Three of the guys liked it. I wasn't really hot on it. Grace and I had a couple of tweets back and forth. And I invited her on the show. So a couple weeks after she was on the show, and I promised her at that point that I would, and then I didn't. So maybe we should just go to my encounter with Grace Randolph, my rematch with Grace Randolph.
Okay, Grace. So a year ago, you came on the show.
Bring it on, Keith.
And I was not the biggest fan of the first issue of Superbia.
No, you were honest about it, though. You didn't trash it. You just said it wasn't for you.
Okay. And you've been nice enough to travel to me. I know that, you know, the convention was happening anyway. You were able to do both, but you came to see me.
That's true.
And find out what I thought of Superbia. And I hadn't actually read another issue since we talked, even though I promised to.
No, that's all right. Even though I came on your show and tried to talk you into it. But you know what? I don't want to force anyone to read anything. But then you came by and you got the trade.
I did. I got the trade yesterday. I read two issues last night. Reread number one. And I read two issues this morning. And, you know, I'm so great.
Is there a button there? So what have you read? You've only read issues one and two in the trade?
I know, I've read the whole trade now.
Okay.
I read the first four. And
did you read one and two of the ongoing then, you mean? Or
no.
Okay, so you read the trade.
I read the whole trade.
Got it.
And there's an old saying that when someone's pointing, you should look at what they're pointing at, not at the finger.
Okay.
And I think when I read the first issue, I went in with the preconception of looking at the heroes of the story. And after I read the second one, and then to the end of the trade, I switched my thinking into, well, those characters actually aren't important. They're placeholders. They're not where the core of the story is. And it was that moment with Eli in the second issue where no one but the audience sees that he has superpowers. That I like, I kind of like this guy.
Oh, good. Eli is a lot of people's favorites. So I know where you're coming from here, what's your overall thought on it now?
Some parts of the storyline I really like.
Okay, good.
I like the, for want of a better term, the Wonder Woman analog section with Eli. I like that family dynamic.
Excellent.
The the Superman analog, the what?
Sovereign. Yeah.
I'm still kind of unsure about that because it doesn't play out to its conclusion in the first four.
No, if you pick up the first arc of the ongoing, that's where that really is explored with his relationship with Helen, aka Hella Hart. So you see that come to a head there.
So, what's next for me? What do I get?
Well, I would say that, you know, I'm glad it's starting to win you over. I'm going to come back on your show. I hope that you'll have read at least the next four, the next arc. And, you know, because I think that Sovereign is your probably the character you have the biggest problem with, right? Like, which character
do you... So far, the Sovereign story is not quite working for me.
All right, yeah.
And, I'm hit and miss on the love triangle story.
Okay. I think if you read the ongoing, the first arc, both of those will come more into focus. The first, you know, even though it's a miniseries, it doesn't really tie everything up because I hoped it would become an ongoing. And also I felt life isn't that neat. I didn't want to rush things for the sake of tying them up, you know, like I thought that would feel cheap, even though if it did result in some people disappointed like yourself. But I think that if you read those that next four issues, I think you'll see a lot of stuff happen to Eli too. And I think it's nice. I mean, one of the great things about having such a big cast is that some of the stories will hit with you at least. You know, hopefully all of them do, or the majority. But, you know, you liked the Metzgers, and there's a lot going on with them in the ongoing. So.
Well, and there's a moment in that fourth issue that was the strongest hook for me to read more, which is when Eli's mom sees his powers and calls him an abomination.
Oh, you like that. Good.
I really like that moment.
Well, I really did not want it to be one of those cheesy moments where she's like, oh, sorry, I accept you. You know, I mean, she's been raised from birth to, you know, dislike men and not trust them and think that they're not, you know, I mean, she found this one guy that she likes, you know, but he puts up with her kind of attitude, but she's not going to do a 180 just immediately. You know, I mean, and you'll see that line, I'm glad you like it, then you're really going to like what happens in the first arc of the ongoing because that's dealt with immediately. One of the things I wanted with Superbia is that some things stay on the back burner if I want to move things forward at a good pace so you didn't have to wait. And I think you'll be happy and surprised with what she does as a reaction, you know, after she wakes up from him knocking her out.
Thanks for taking this time. We'll talk to you in a couple weeks.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for giving it a second chance, Keith.
Absolutely. I keep my promises.
Good.
Enjoy your time at the Calgary Comic and Entertainment Expo. Thanks for coming all this way. And I'm going to go to your booth now and pick up the next four issues.
Oh, great. Okay. That's wonderful. All right, let's go. Let's go buy some comics.
All right. Well, thanks very much to Grace. She's a very smart lady, very interesting, lovely lady. A lot of opinions in the comic book industry as well that we're getting off camera talking about the different books and publishers and different things going on. So she's not too fond of that New 52, hey, Keith?
She said she has been cooling on it. Yeah, so hopefully we'll have her on the show in a few weeks to talk about Superbia when the next arc is going to be starting up, and hopefully we'll talk about some general comic stuff too.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
I love the inscription she gave me on the trade paperback though. I got the trade paperback on Friday from her so I could read it overnight, and she did an inscription on the front. To Keith, I hope you don't hate this too much, Grace.
That's awesome. I like that you said told Jessica that she's of Mom's Read Comics and Comicosity that and the Hangout, all that. She's got more projects than freaking Bendis does. But anyways, I love that you told her that she wasn't too fond of the New 52, that Grace wasn't, and that blew her mind, so that's kind of funny. Anyways, let's move on here. Chris has been sitting quietly, just kind of listening to the convention stories. He couldn't come down for this weekend, yeah. But he had a little bit. Let's take a little break from the convention. We'll come back and talk some more convention talk. But Chris, what have you been up to?
Well, as you said, I couldn't attend the con, but that did not prevent me from talking to the comic book creators. I talked to two lovely young gentlemen from Britain, Michael Young and Mark Crane, about their noir comic book, Lil. And it is available free at their website, lilcomic.co.uk. And here's how that went down.
Chris here. I'm sitting down today with Mark Crane and Mike Young, who were nice enough to send me a PDF of their new comic, Lil. This comic book kind of really played my sensibilities. I read the first 4 or 5 pages and immediately had to put it down and run over to my local dive and have a pint and have my favorite waitress, who may or may not be on drugs, serve me my drink, because that's the kind of book this is. This is a noir. Welcome to the podcast, Mark and Mike. And I'm going to throw you right in the deep end here. What is noir to you? How do you define it?
Well, I guess noir. I mean, I've kind of always been interested in all the film noirs from the 40s and 50s, and noir to us is someone that's down on their luck and a bit of an anti-hero, and you kind of go along a journey with them and see where it takes you, sort of thing, and it's all to do with things like fate coming in and just general spiraling out of control. So weird sort of subject that we're into.
You're both credited as producing and creating. What is the work breakdown?
Well, it's how we kind of both started with the project from the start. Everything was equal. We kind of wrote the story together and creating the pitch together as well. As it's been developing, it's kind of more doing the kind of writing and me doing more of the drawings. But it was just a kind of natural progression, really, wasn't it? It didn't really feel right to say, you know, Mark Crane, inker or young writer. So it felt a bit more natural for us to put it that way.
We both come in with little bits here and there. You know, we'll bounce ideas off of each other, but we'll also draw different pictures. But Mark kind of hones it all together in the end. So that's definitely how the split is looking at the moment.
I really related to your protagonist, Lil. She's one of the most stripped that's down, raw. Sorry?
That's a bit worrying.
It's the type of character I respond to. A stripped down, emotionally crippled individual. In comics, I don't think I've seen a character outside of a character like Marv in Sin City this raw. Did she come first, or did the story come first?
Bit of a strange one, actually. We actually came up with the device of the telling a story through the bag and the bag that she ends up stealing. And that was our starting point. We kind of wanted to start off with a Hitchcock MacGuffin type thing and then run from there. And we kind of came up with the guy and the girl in the bar. And it just quickly developed from there that she was the more interesting of the characters. And so when we started, you know, rolling with the story, as soon as we had her, it started coming out of us quite quickly, didn't it?
Yeah, we wanted, and from the start, we wanted our main character to be a complete badass as well, didn't we? You know.
Yeah.
Oh, she certainly is that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and it just kind of, just naturally ended up being the kind of girl from the start, didn't you?
We thought it was actually interesting that you mentioned Marv, because we'd actually watched that film quite a lot beforehand, and it is that kind of really raw character that you is not unsympathetic, even though they're doing a lot of things that aren't generally seen as
she's just very antisocial.
Yeah,
it's kind of how you'd like to act in everyday life, but you can't get away with. That's how we wanted it to be,
living out our fantasies.
we keep going back to the movies, and your book is quite cinematic. What's with all the Leone shots? I don't think I have seen this many extreme close-ups in a comic book ever. whose influence is that?
It's hard to say, really. I think we just
we have always thought of it as like a film on paper. It's a really strange sort of thing. And because it's such an intense story, I think that you needed the close-ups, you needed to see everything, you know, warts and all. And so it was a definite thing that we tried to, like, get in there from the start.
Yeah. The
close-ups.
I mean,
the grotesqueness of it all.
I mean, I'm kind of an extreme horror fan, so
yeah.
Well, I'm really into zombie films and the kind of when they're like eating people alive, and you got all the close-ups of guts and stuff like that. So, any opportunity to kind of put in a close-up of someone eating disgustingly.
We always talk about the scene from Death Proof where Kurt Russell's eating the nachos, and that you get a close-up of the licking the fingers and stuff. We try and put that on every single page, you know, at least one picture.
Now that you mention that, you need a pussy in there too. I mean, Kirk Russell in that movie, when he turns into a pussy, that's my favorite moment. But
it's brilliant. And then the film just ends.
He starts crying.
Since we're talking about movies' influence on your comic book, how about casting Lil? Who would you like to see play Lil in Lil the movie?
For me, it's Asia Argento. I'd always just, whenever I'm drawing Lil, I just think that's like her face.
Yeah.
I mean, the only kind of mainstream film I can think of she's in was Land of the Dead, which is not really a great film.
She was in Triple X, and she's a director in her own right.
So. Yeah. But I think I don't know, if you kind of look her up outside of films and stuff, her actual personality and stuff is
quite close.
She's like a badass.
It's just a bio on her, really. No, yeah. Basically, that's what we're
You got something completely different, though.
Well, I've always liked Natalie Portman's voice. I think her voice would be great for it, like the voiceovers.
Yeah,
and
like
stuff.
In Star Wars.
Yeah, it's brilliant as well. But no, I mean, obviously, Leon, that was, you know, she kind of looks a little bit like her in that. But
And she's 12.
Yeah. But no, her voice is, I think she'd fit.
Yeah, for some reason, as I was reading it, I cast Carrie Ann Moss for some reason. But no, she's Canadian, so we go there. So.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no, I can definitely see that, yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, what are you guys reading for comic books right now? Or are you reading comic books?
Well, I'm still going through The Walking Dead. Waiting for the next volume to come out. That's the only kind of...
Yeah, you've got me into that one, haven't you? Yeah, I mean, like, that's the thing. We have always come from more of a film background, but this the great thing about doing this is it has got us into more comic books, and people are recommending, you know, 100 Bullets and what was that one? Criminal and stuff like that.
Frogman.
Yeah, we picked up a few independent comics because we thought we better see, you know, what our competition is and stuff like that. So we're trying to support the independent scene because we're hoping to get a bit of support as well, so...
And in my opinion, you really come in at an exciting time. There's so much independent talent out there right now. It's ridiculous.
That's great, yeah. And people are saying that, you know, you kind of got the, because you're not being held back by working for a company or doing mainstream stuff, you're getting a lot of exciting stuff out there that you wouldn't normally see, maybe in the mainstream.
Yeah, no, you guys are... It seems like you guys are so associated with Orbital Comics, a store in London.
That's right, yeah.
That's the store we just got in, yeah.
It seems like a really cool shop. I followed them on Twitter for quite a while. Seems like they know what they're doing. So are you available only through Orbital Comics right now? Or if I wanted a physical copy, it's just through the website, or how can I get my hands on one, or how can our listeners get their hands on one?
Yeah, we've set up an online shop so you can buy it online. But yeah, Orbital Comics is the only store you can go in and get it from at the moment. They've got a whole small press section, which is like, you know, there's like thousands of small press comics in there, and it's just great, really. You just walk in and You can spend like a whole day in there, basically just flicking through stuff.
No, that's what I look for in a comic book store. I call that the goodie bag.
Yeah,
you never know what you're gonna walk out with, but it's you always get one that just blows you away.
Oh yeah, I mean they've got loads of old kind of wrestling toys and stuff in there as well.
The old million dollar man. And
that's great. Yeah.
Now, I spent all afternoon actually researching, or not researching, I had a lot of dead time at work today anyway, looking for the All-American Motel. Is this based off a real place or anything? Because I found about 40 pictures that looked very similar and also were called the All-American Hotel. did you actually have a photo reference for that?
Yeah, definitely. we kind of done a bit of research on Google Images, yeah. And
we always have an idea in our heads how it should be, but we want to get as authentic as we can. So we try and take stuff from photos that we see and stuff, because we can't see the real thing, unfortunately. So
there's no all American hotels in Essex. Travel Lodge.
And that was the idea, that it could be anywhere in that sort of region, and that's kind of what we wanted to get across.
Just to end things up, if people want to view your book or see your book, other than going to your website and ordering a copy, of course, where can they find it?
There's an issues section, isn't there, on the website that you can kind of, it's like on a flip snack thing, that's where you can like view it online.
Yeah, you can read it online.
It's also on Drunk Duck as well, Drunk Duck Comics. If you've got a slow computer in there, it's self to HTML. So
actually, the reader on your website is quite good, and that's at lilcomics.co.uk.
www.lilcomic.co.uk.
And we're actually hoping to have issue 7. Is it issue 7 coming out?
Issue 6.
No, it's not, is it?
Issue 6.
Oh god, yeah, I don't even know what issue we're up to now. Issue 6 coming out next week. So,
all right, that actually should work out fine, because I believe that's when this interview will air.
Sweet.
Oh wow.
Yes.
There's timing for you.
Yep.
Yes. Thanks, guys. It was great. I really enjoyed talking to you. I love getting a little bit of insight behind the scenes of Lil the comic book. Once again, that's it. lilcomic.co.uk.
All right, good stuff, Chris. Thank you very much. Best success to those gentlemen as well. We love people who are passionate about comic books, and these people qualify. Speaking about people that are passionate about comic books, or maybe he's not, I can't tell anymore. Keith, Kurt Pierce, of course, writer of LP and the Theremin that we reviewed there a couple weeks ago. This cut out through Monkey Brain. Kurt is the most unique human being possibly on the planet. We had a little encounter with him. Why don't you say, why don't you just relate that?
Oh, Kurt was only there on Friday night. So both Brett and I had sent him notes that we wanted to get hard copies of LP, because he had been nice enough to give us a PDF to read and review for the show. So he has these in his bag. We run into him at a crossroads in Artist Alley. And he's got the copies, and he's counting them off. And I'm not going to try to do Kurt's voice, because I'm sometimes told I've got a dry sense of humor. I am the Atlantic Ocean compared to Kurt's sense of humor.
But that's exactly it. I mean, this won't be as impactful as, because you just got to understand how he talks, because everything has that stop beat to it before the punchline. Everything he says has this really dry kind of, doesn't sound like he's going to say something funny or something at all, and then it just comes out. But anyways, Keith, go ahead.
So Kurt is counting the copies in his bag, and he's, all right, this one for you and one for you, and I've got, okay, that leaves me 8, and I know that people have ordered 8, so I probably shouldn't sell anymore. And then he tells us he stopped selling things for the website because the shipping has been killing him, and he can no longer afford to sell things through the site. And then so we start talking about Monkey Brain, and congratulating him on Theremin. It's a great debut. And he said, yeah, it's, at 99 cents, we get about 30 cents, which is, that's okay. And at this rate, I might make like $200 or $300. Off this book, so it's not nothing. But, you know, I don't really give a shit, I guess. So, kids, you practice and write, and you might get into those big, the big comic book dollars.
That's well, right. You too can have a hit digital comic.
How about when he talked about how upset he was that he didn't get a table for this weekend?
Oh yeah, that was a great quote. So there were a couple of Calgary creators that, for one reason or another, had trouble getting space in Artist Alley. Our buddy Scott Qualchuk did end up being at the show. He was at the ACAD table for part of Saturday. Go to my Twitter and you can see a photo of the fantastic commission that Scott did for me. But Kurt was another one who couldn't get a table. And Kurt says, you know, I was really upset about not having a table, and then I remembered that I don't have anything to sell. I fucking hate tabling. So maybe it's okay after all.
He's the best. I love that guy.
He's just so unbelievable. Because I get the feeling as he's saying it, he's also discovering this about himself. That's the thing. Oh, so good. So good. All right. Hey, let's talk to somebody who enjoys selling things. Bryce Carlson. Brett, what's the story, the background between our hookup with the managing editor over at Boom?
Well, our good buddy Aaron, the you know, the head honcho of Comicosity. You know, I barely even remember what got us started, but he said that he had a hookup and he knew of Bryce Carlson, and so he thought, why doesn't he try to hook us up there? So he did that, and so we just went in for an interview, and then you just totally pitched him on drinks, and well, really, I think you offering to buy the round of drinks, the first round of drinks, kind of sold him on that. So you know,
yeah, Saturday it wasn't really night. Hard. It's really hard to get out a group of comic book creators when you say, "Hey, that first bit of alcohol, I will purchase for you." Really hard for them to really get them excited.
But yeah, so Saturday we sat down at a somewhat loud area and sat and talked to Bryce Carlson, but we got over 30 minutes with him, and it was an awesome, awesome interview. He is a funny guy who knows his stuff, so I say enjoy it.
All right, I'm here with Bryce Carlson, the managing editor of Boom Studios. Now tell me, Bryce, what do you do?
Oh, it's the question I probably get the most. It's the hardest to answer. The role of managing editor is a lot of different hats. You know, probably at the core, my focuses are editorial, creative, scheduling, you know, making sure the books are all coming out on time, managing the editors and projects, making sure everything's going well, a lot of problem solving. Being that I'm a senior member of the editorial team and have been there for a long time and fought a lot of wars, it's nice to offer support to the assistant editors and the editors who, you know, need help, whether it's with bringing in higher profile creators or just help with development, dealing with certain situations that they don't know how to deal with, but whether it's a difficult creator or what have you. So that's a lot of it. I deal with all of our printers on a production end. I manage a production design team, so all of the graphic design that's being done, I'm overseeing and signing off on that stuff. Working, you know, pretty much hand in hand with Matt Gagnon, the editor in chief, on development and bringing in new projects and doing all that kind of stuff. And just being a big part of the upper management team with Matt and Ross and Philip, Matt Nissenbaum, Phil Barbaro. And contributing to big picture stuff and really being integrated. That's probably my favorite part about working there and being the managing editor is that I get to be involved in so many important aspects of the company and see kind of the fruits of my labor blossom on a daily basis, which is really cool.
So how is it then that you work to break in new projects? Like what kind of new things does Boom look for?
You know, it varies. A lot of times it's people coming to us with stuff. You know, creators come to us with ideas that they're passionate about, looking for a home, and if we're on the same page and like excited about the project, then awesome. You know, we have a deal and we work on it from there. Sometimes we do develop stuff in-house and then create teams. It just kind of depends. You know, we try and look at the publishing plan on a macro basis and put together something that has a lot of different projects in it. You know, we don't like to really like gang up a bunch of the same thing like in a year. Like, we don't want to do like 3 vampire books in a year, you know, because we want to be able to like, no, let's do a vampire book, a superhero book, and a zombie book, and, you know, an action adventure book, and really try and spread it out so that we're doing the most diverse publishing we can. So we're always looking for everything, which is really cool. Not a lot of publishers can say that. You're going to publishers that are superhero focused, you know, you can only bring them superhero ideas. Maybe you can throw in some twists to get some other genre pieces in there, but we're literally always looking for stuff. And what's great is when we find a project we like, even if it doesn't work in the grand scheme of like publishing plan for a year, like, it's no problem. Like, but oh, but it would be great next year, and we can just give us more development time, so it's really nice.
So you have a lot of great creators. How is it that Boom is attracting those great creators?
I think right now people are attracted to Boom just because of like what we've been able to really say about ourselves. Like, I think people are attracted to the company because of who we are. Like, the message that we're sending out right now is, you know, it's diversity, it's creator relationships with the publisher, not just like bringing people to work for us. It's bringing people into the fold and into the family and being part of something bigger than just publishing comics. You know, we really do have a distinct vision for moving forward and wanting to be a progressive company, and attract all kinds of different talent and readerships. And I think people see that in our books. They see the different stuff that we do, and, you know, they have a good time working with us. I think our staff is amazing. I'm so happy to go to work every day because of the people I work with. I mean, obviously, I love comics. I love being creative in what I do. But coming in with that team every day is surreal. I mean, I'm not just a cog in a wheel. No one's just a cog in a wheel there. We're all working together. It's very team-focused. And I think creators are really yearning for that right now, especially ones that are working at bigger publishers. I don't think they're getting that kind of relationship out of the projects they're working on. And being able to come in with something original and be able to take ownership over it, I think, is huge, too. They're, you know, we're not... The way we run editorial is not a dictatorship. We're not trying to put our stories out there. We're trying to get creators to tell the best stories that they can and what they're excited about. At the end of the day, if a creator wants to do something and we're giving advice, they can ignore the advice and do what they want to do, and that's what's going to happen. Because ultimately, it's their vision, it's their baby. We want to make sure that they are telling the story they want to tell. And, you know, we're happy to be their support. Like, our editorial team is amazing. It's top-notch, whether it's finding artists, doing development notes, or anything like that. Like, everyone is really good. And like I said, it's a team operation. And I think that comes through, and people see that, and they want to be a part of it.
So how does the math work, then, with creator-owned projects? Like, what are the kind of percentages, basically, that you see?
You know, different projects have different deals, so that's going to vary, but, you know, the main philosophy that we have with original material is a partnership. You know, it's been that way from day one with Ross and Keith Giffen. And actually, Keith Giffen is the one who prompted Ross to do that, because back then, you know, it's like you had the Image deal, and then you had other publishers who weren't really doing a lot of creator-owned stuff. And so when Keith came to Ross and was like, I want to be partners with this, Ross was like, why would you want to do that? And he goes, because I want you to care. I want you to be invested in the project. And that's really the essence of our original material when we're working with creators, is that we're creating a partnership that we're both invested in, so that we're both getting the best work possible. Because the last thing you want to do is bring an original project to a publisher and they don't market it, or, you know, they don't put all their energy into it because they don't have a stake in it. You know, when we're coming together as partners, we're both going to give it our all, and we want to succeed, because guess what? If one person succeeds, the other person succeeds, and everyone's happy, and we're moving together as a team. And I think that's really what it comes back to, is the team mentality and working together.
And so Boom also has a lot of properties, which I find very interesting. How do you go about acquiring the property rights?
It's it's different for different properties, but a lot of times it can be suggestions from inside the company. You know, whether it's me or Matt or Ross or Philip looking at stuff and saying, "Oh, this is a really cool property," and we talk about it and decide whether or not it's something we really want to pursue. Lance Kreider, who's our VP of licensing and merchandising, is great. Because he's in the international spectrum so much, he actually is able to come in and show us some stuff that's out there that we may not be seeing in the American market, which is really cool. But a lot of times, you know, we're totally open to everyone in the company having a voice and giving suggestions. I mean, Adventure Time was an idea that was presented by an assistant editor. And to be honest, at most other publishers, that's not something that would fly. In fact, there's another publisher where there were assistant editors who wanted to go after Adventure Time, but because of a specific chain of command, it didn't happen because they weren't listening to them. And because we do listen, we're able to get properties like that and be successful. And we believe that a good idea can come from anywhere, and we don't discount anyone ever.
Well, I am very impressed because of the Kaboom line. So you guys seem to work a lot towards the all ages material, and is that a, you know, really conscious focus for you?
You know, it is. We definitely try and be diverse and do everything. Like, do a lot of stuff through the studios imprint, a lot of stuff through Kaboom, do a lot of different indie stuff through the Boomtown imprint. But what's really great about Kaboom is that is something that we've developed over the years that's really made All Ages Comics a force again. Because I'll tell you what, before we were doing the Disney Pixar books, like, the All Ages market was almost non-existent. And that's one of the things we do. We like to go in there and do the things that people say you can't do. Oh no, you can't do All Ages Comics. Well, guess what? We're going to do All Ages Comics. And over the years, doing a bunch of different properties and working with a bunch of different creators, we've been able to stimulate this readership. And now you have things like My Little Pony and Adventure Time and all these cool projects that are attracting tons of readers. I mean, with Adventure Time going through multiple sellouts and My Little Pony selling 90,000 copies of issue one, like, that is a market that didn't exist 5 years ago. And now it's what's so great about it is bringing in new readers, which is huge. It's what comics really needs. What we should always be focused on is that next generation of readers, so that it doesn't die out, because comics, you know, is very hill and valley in terms of the market. And right now, I feel like we're really putting our best foot forward, and a lot of publishers are focused on doing more all-ages content, which is really important.
Is there more that you would suggest, like, for comic stores and that kind of thing, that they could do to help support new readers and bring them in?
You know, I think they're doing a great job right now. They're stocking the books. They're putting their money, you know, towards that stuff, which they weren't, which is really great. I mean, that's the number one thing they can do, from my perspective, is have those books in stock so that when kids do come in or parents do come in, they have something that they can pick up. Because, you know, there are non-comic readers who will come in to pick up an Adventure Time or what have you, or a Peanuts or a Garfield, and if it's not there, well, they're probably not going to come back. But if it's there and it's in stock and they know that they can go to their local store and be able to get all ages material, then that's just going to be the best thing for everybody.
So then what do you think about digital as a strategy? Like, how do you think that's impacting the marketplace from Boom's perspective, say?
Digital's great. I love digital. I'm happy that we're able to get, you know, all our books out on digital, and I think it's going to really take off. I don't think it's quite as robust now as people might think, but I do think that as we continue to progress, digital is going to be a huge part for a lot of reasons. I mean, even for something as small as, like, people don't have space in their home to be
putting long boxes on long boxes on long boxes, it's a lot easier to categorize and keep things digitally, and I get that. But, you know, also, it is more cost-effective, too. You know, you're getting a cheaper price on digital comics, and that makes sense, especially when you're in certain parts of the world that have a down economy. You know, being able to shave off a dollar or two off a cover price is huge. And, what's great about that is it helps readers get more stuff, because if you have a couple bucks left over, like, I know people who have, they, you know, you have your comic budget, you're like, all right, I have this much money to spend this week. Well, if you're buying digitally, you can get an extra two books out of your budget. So it's really cool. I'm so happy that it's available. I can't wait to see where it goes, because I think there's a lot of great possibilities and opportunities to explore a different experience through digital that you can't get through print. I mean, I love print comics. It's still our bread and butter, and I think will continue to be for quite some time. But I think it's a very exciting era to see digital comics really start to play a bigger part in where they're going to go.
All right, so well, based on digital, then let's. What about piracy? How does that impact you, and how have you noticed an impact?
You know, people are going to pirate things. They always find a way. There's people who are going to scan books and do whatever. You know, we're pretty good when we catch stuff about getting things taken down off of torrent sites and stuff, just like a lot of publishers are. You know, at the end of the day, it's just something that's there. You know, I wish it wasn't. I wish it wasn't the case, because, you know, it's not helping the market. But it's just a reality of being in comics at this point.
Yeah, it's too bad. Have you guys got digital first ideas coming out? Like, because I'm impressed with the DC and Marvel offerings, like where they're offering some of the, especially like the Injustice and those kind of series for 99 cents right, like a couple days early even. And what kind of things would you have planned?
Yeah, you know, we're definitely looking at all kinds of new strategies with digital, and, you know, at some point really would like to do some digital first, digital only content. Right now, you know, we're not quite there. There's no immediate plans to do that, but it's definitely part of a bigger discussion in our digital strategy. But, I mean, we've always been purveyors of digital. You know, we were the first company to do day and date book when we did Hex, partnered up with MySpace to do it. So we're very much invested in wanting to be, like, on the cusp of what's new and how digital can really be utilized and how to grow it.
So what then, how are conventions for this kind of things? Like, when you go out to these conventions, like, do you get a nice big boost in sales and that kind of thing? Is that the primary reason you come to a convention?
The primary reason we go to conventions is for visibility and to interact with the fans. We like being present. We like seeing our fans. We like being able to talk with them instead of just selling them a book. Obviously, the retail is great. We've got to pay for the show, and, you know, being profitable makes a show really worth it. But it is really more about having those times when you can talk about different properties that people are excited about and really be out there and put faces to the company. Because at the end of the day, we don't want to be a faceless corporation that's publishing books. We want people to know who we are. I want people to know who I am. I want them to be able to say, oh, that's Bryce, the managing editor. Like, he's great. I talked to him about Deathmatch. And, like, we totally geeked out for a while and started talking about Star Wars. And then it got really weird because he went on this tangent about bounty hunters. And it was just crazy. But, I mean, that's the kind of stuff that we love. We're part of the community. And that's really important. Like, I love the comics community. I'm ingrained in it. I want to be as prominent and as effective as I can and help people have an enjoyable experience in comics. So I think that's the biggest priority when we go to shows, is that interaction.
How does somebody who's not established in the industry approach Boom about, you know, joining Boom, getting established?
So, you know, we have an artist forum on our website, which is great. You know, people are free to come on and post anything they want. The editors check that stuff all the time, and we've hired many people through it. Conventions are great. We always take artist submissions. And then it's just like, I mean, I get emails from people, too, who are just like, they have an idea for something and they want to share it. And it's great, you know, hear it out. Whether or not we decide to pursue it or not, it's fine. Like, we're open to hearing these ideas. So, you know, conventions are great. you know, coming in online is awesome, and obviously if it's an introduction, if it's coming through someone I'm already talking to, you know, that's always a good way. It's nice to have someone in your corner when you're presenting a project. It actually goes a long way, and it's really fun. But, I mean, we're all very approachable, so it's just either finding us online or in person and making something happen.
That's awesome. So the last question that I'll ask you is just give a big plug to whatever you want to.
Oh, so many things to plug, so little time. Suicide Risk Number 1 from Mike Carey and Elena Casagrande comes out on Wednesday, May 1st. It's a great new dark superhero book. Anyone who's a fan of Irredeemable is going to love it. I mean, Mike is an absolute talent to be reckoned with, and he's really letting loose on this project, and I think people are going to be really happy. Fans who have liked his superhero work and his Vertigo work, it strikes a perfect balance for both kinds of fans. Regular show is going to be coming out in a couple weeks, full first issue, which is going to be great. People are really excited. Sales on that have been just phenomenal. It's like it's actually like crazy to see these all ages book get those kind of numbers. So I'm excited to see that actually in the marketplace and get a lot of feedback and see how people are enjoying it, because they seem to like the preview issue, so that's really good. And yeah, Adventure Time OGN, Playing with Fire by Danielle Corsetto, with art by Zach Sterling, comes out at the end of May, I believe May 29th, which is going to be great. It's an original graphic novel, black and white, very much in like the Scott Pilgrim kind of vein. It's really cool. It's a long story. It's like 160 page book, and I think it's like 150 something of story, so it's really a great new addition to the Adventure Time lineup. And yeah, you know, lots of good stuff. Polarity is great. If people haven't checked it out, I think that's a good one to really take a look at and get in on ground floor.
All right, and then give us your Twitter feed. We'll try to feed you some more Twitter followers.
Oh yeah, just at Bryce R. Carlson. That's all you need. And obviously at Boom Studios is the main one, which has a lot of good information on a daily basis, and a lot of good stuff on Instagram too.
Thanks, Bryce. We appreciate it.
Awesome. Thanks, Brett.
Do you have any questions?
I do have one question.
Okay, excellent.
And it completely changed pace.
Okay, perfect. I'll just put this down here. We'll just record everything.
So I'm a digital and trade reader. I don't get singles anymore. Why is Planet of the Apes not on Comixology?
Oh, why is Planet of the Apes not on Comixology? That's is not a Boom decision at this point. That is due to circumstances that we cannot control. But the good news is that we are working towards getting Planet of the Apes digital, and have always wanted to. So we're continually working for it, and things look good, and hopefully we will have it soon, so that we'll finally be out there, and fans like yourself will be able to read it digitally, and everyone will be happy.
They might be very happy. do I have anything? Of course, he's got like 4,000. Okay, let's go back to the idea of the all ages books. One of the things that's impressive here is that it just seems like there's a shift that all ages books for a period of time didn't have to be of a certain level of quality. Just put it out for kids. Who cares? Boom seems to be approaching it like, we're going to make as good a book as possible. An adult can read this and enjoy this, and it's still approachable for a kid. So can you just talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head. It's about making a true all-ages book. If you're making books just for kids, that's great. They're for kids. But if you're making an all-ages book, you don't want to make a book that an adult feels weird about picking up. And that's what we strive to do, is make a book that, you know, an adult reader can pick up and enjoy, and a young reader can pick up and enjoy. And we really have been able to strike a nice balance on something like Adventure Time, because we're bringing in a lot of indie creators, a lot of web cartoonists, a lot of voices who are not as prominent in the direct market space, who have really great, unique ways of storytelling. And so far it's been working out. Everyone loves reading it. So it's nice, because we're able to bring in people from a different part of the community
and give them an outlet into another. And I think people see that and they're getting something new, which is, I think, really important. It's like being fresh and being new and finding new creators is really what it's all about. Obviously, there's creators I love, but you don't just want the entire community to revolve around the same batch of people. You want to be able to be getting new voices. And when it comes to all ages material, I think that's what helps it become so successful. You know, getting new voices in there who are approaching it from a different way. Because you have adults who are coming like, oh, yeah, like this is a great story. It's someone I don't know, and they're doing it the right way. And kids are able to get in on the ground floor on someone who, you know, is probably going to have a good career.
Now, related to that, and I know you probably don't want to talk directly about another company, so we won't use any specific examples here. But, you know, they have lines of books, their core books and their core audience. For instance, they'll mark them as being teen or teen plus, and not a single one of them you can probably give to a 10-year-old. You know, if you have a superhero that you can't necessarily, that I grew up on, that I was reading as a 10-year-old, I wouldn't feel comfortable now giving to a 10-year-old. And so I just want to get your opinion on that.
Yeah, you know, it is tough. I do find it somewhat, you know, disheartening that you can't just pick up a core superhero book and hand it to a young reader anymore. You know, when we're doing books, we really strive to hit that like PG-13 level. Like, you know, our stand, we don't use a really complicated rating system. You know, we basically have the all ages books that come out through Kaboom, which, you know, speak for themselves. Anyone should be able to pick that up and like it. And with the studio stuff, it's basically just a PG-13 book. Like, those are the guidelines we pretty much stick with, and we want it to be accessible. That's a huge part of our business, is accessibility. We want, you know, people from all over, from, you know, all ages to be able to pick up a book and enjoy it. So, you know, obviously we do some stuff that's dark and some stuff that's a little more lighthearted. But, you know, I believe that through our creative and the way it's presented, it's pretty easy to see. And, you know, right now, I think since there are a lot of young readers coming in with this boom of all ages comics and stuff, that the onus is really on parents now, you know, to be looking at stuff and seeing, you know, what they want to present to their kids and stuff, which I think is really cool because it's making comics more interactive. I mean, if I had kids, like, okay, great, so I have an excuse to read a bunch of comics so that I can see what's good for the kids and stuff, make sure everything's okay. But it also gives, I think, parents and kids something to talk about, and I think that's hugely important. That kind of communication is super valuable, and if comics is something that can kind of promote that, then that's awesome.
So, if a publisher is sitting there and they have a property and it is not accessible to a younger audience, are they, because of, let's face it, the adults are the ones who are buying the properties, they're buying the majority of the comic books, are they cutting off their nose to spite their face? Do you know what I mean? Like, at some point in time, is there a fear that if the books aren't accessible to the young members, and I know your guys are doing your part, but if they're not, who's going to be reading the books in 10 years, 20 years?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because a lot of publishers kind of find their niche, and there's some publishers who are going to do, you know, more graphic, mature material, and that sort of thing. That's what they do. And there's some publishers who are doing stuff that's a little lighter and wanting to stay, for lack of a better word, safe on the material they're generating. But yeah, and that's why one of the reasons I like being at Boom is it is diverse. We do things that don't necessarily have a limited shelf. You know, I think there's a lot of books out there that, yeah, maybe you're not going to be able to give to readers in 5-10 years, especially younger readers. I like to think that a lot of our stuff that we do, you will be able to.
Is there a book that is too far, like Black Kiss, for instance, from Image, creator owned? But borderline pornographic, would that be too far? Is it something that's too far for Boom?
You know, it's, I mean, we do mature readers content. Hellraiser is a mature readers book. Clive Barker is an amazing talent. He likes to do very graphic, very
visceral content, and that's fine, but we always put the label on and make sure that it says mature readers so people know. And the, you know, we've done plenty of projects like that. It's not our, our core business by any means. We probably only do a couple mature readers titles a year. But yeah, I mean, we're definitely open to doing everything. And, you know, at the end of the day, I don't think that we're going out and trying to find something that's poke you in the eye, like just gut-wrenching, crazy stuff. But if someone comes to us with a great story to tell and there's elements like that in it, then we're not opposed to seeing them.
I've heard people say this, and this is, I believe this is a compliment, because Image has evolved from where they were into being a different style of publisher nowadays. And I've heard people say to me, Polarity seems like a book that would have been published by Image. Now, I think that's a compliment, though, but I just want to get your opinion on that.
Absolutely. Been hearing the same thing myself, and I definitely take it as a compliment. What Image is doing right now is phenomenal. They are in top form. Really, really happy that they are experiencing as much success as they are. I love that there are creator-owned books out there right now that are top-selling titles. So couldn't be more happy that, because at the end of the day, when other publishers, other top publishers are doing well, we're doing well, the whole comics industry is doing well. It's a very interconnected industry. It's like when Marvel and DC are selling tons of books, that brings everybody up. Everyone's bench gets raised. That's fantastic. So yeah, I totally take it as a compliment. It's great. It does have the vibe, and I think a lot of that is Max's voice. Max has a very unique style of storytelling. He's able to get in there and spend pages just, you know, talking in a museum and examining culture and doing things that are not what you would think of as a mainstream comic. And Jorge Coelho's art is perfect. Like, if he wasn't on Polarity, I'm pretty sure someone would have him on an Image book right now. And it's cool. Like, it's nice to be able to see multiple publishers doing this kind of content that's being noticed by everyone. Like, I love it. I wish that all the publishers were able to do these creator projects that look like an Image book. I think it's helpful to the community at large.
So there's the mix of creator-owned, all-audience, licensed. There's a lot of echoes of a company that's close to our hearts, Malibu Comics, from the 90s. Would there ever be a Boom shared universe?
You know, it depends. Well, and it's funny that you bring up Malibu, because Ross worked at Malibu before he started Boom. He was in the marketing department over there. So it's funny that you say that. You know, right now we're not looking at pursuing like a big Boom shared universe, but that's not to say, you know, when we did Irredeemable, we also did Incorruptible, and that, you know, it was only two series, but that was a shared universe with different characters that were crossing over and stuff like that. And I think it just depends on the property. Like, I think right now where we're at is we're creating some different worlds. So, you know, we've created a world in Deathmatch that, who knows, you know, that could be something that kind of spawns some other stuff, and you start to see more of that universe in itself. Since it is really cool, it's one that I love. I mean, what Paul is doing right now and the way he's adding depth to that universe is really cool and something new and unique. And I mean, it's not often that you get a brand new superhero universe that has history and secret origins and all this stuff, because, you know, it takes time, but he's figured out a way to really do it well and in a way that's digestible for readers. And we've gotten the compliment a lot that, you know, they pick up Deathmatch number one and they go through and they're like, wow, it seems like this is a universe that's been around for a while and it's only the first issue. And, you know, I love the idea of having stuff that exists in the same universe. So, you know, who knows? You know, we'll see. It's definitely something we're open to and would love to see happen.
When I hear some people talking about the industry right now, sometimes I get a pessimistic point of view from them. But I feel 1 year ago, I was far more pessimistic than I am right now. I feel there's been a positive strides. I feel like things are kind of just bubbling underneath the surface, and they're about to break open again. It'd be really big for the comic book industry. I just kind of want to get your opinion on that.
I think this is one of the
most optimistic times in comics since I've been in the industry. It's really exciting. There's a lot of crackle. There's a lot of pop. Some of that's because of, you know, the transmedia stuff that's been happening with comics becoming, you know, with stuff like Walking Dead and the Marvel movies and stuff like that. There's just this growing awareness. And I think you're right. I think we're on the front door of something big, of a new boom. I mean, when you look at sales numbers in the last couple of months, and you see, you know, companies like Image and IDW like having just unbelievable numbers, I think there's a reason for that. I think people are coming out, and you're seeing a lot of people who are getting, you know, they're getting their superhero fix. But I think we're seeing a lot more readers than ever who are looking towards other publishers outside of Marvel and DC, which is really, really exciting. And it's an absolute privilege to be a part of this time. I just hope that it keeps going the way it's going. I think it's going to be a lot of fun if it does.
And then one last question that has absolutely nothing related to anything except for yesterday your main tag did not say Bryce Carlson. What's the story? I think, what did they say, like Mitch Gaylord or something?
It was Jerry Gaylord's pass. Yeah, there was a some kind of mix-up when they were doing badges, so I had to be Jerry Gaylord for a day.
For a day, because we walked by going three times, where the hell is that Bryce guy?
Well, it's funny because I thought that it was you. Like, I saw it because I'm like, I know that look, but then I'm like, but Jerry Gaylord? Well, maybe.
Well, I feel bad because I do Jerry absolutely no justice. He's an amazing artist and an amazing guy, so... I actually did have someone come up to me with a Fanboys vs. Zombie in comic and ask me for my autograph. And I'd forgotten that I was wearing Jerry's pass, and I had to explain, like, oh, no, like, I'm not Jerry. And he was, like, kind of bummed. I'm like, but, I am, like, the managing editor on the book, and I've been working on the book since it started. And he was like, oh, well, would you like to sign? I'm like, oh, sure. I'm like, so, you know, at least he got something out of it.
There you go. All right, well, I hope this was great. I hope Brett can... get the audio out of this. I hope his editing genius is capable.
All right, great stuff, Brett. Well, it's really interesting to talk to somebody not about the creative side, but more about the inside business aspects sometimes too, and kind of get that perspective as well. So kind of mixing it up here, we got so much great stuff on this show, but you know what we really need to do now? I don't know, Keith, there's some people out there. What if they buy a book that isn't so good? What can we do to help them? I say we can do some reviews, don't you think?
That's right.
Because we are...
Here I come to save the day!
Saving you from bad comics.
Damn right. All right, let's do it, Keith. Let's save somebody from a bad comic. Let's talk about The Movement.
Now there's a title of a book that is just ready-made for the snarky headlines.
Actually, I think it's funny because I did not think about that at all when I was reading it. But man, oh man, the second that we started talking about it on the podcast, it was just like, bam, there it is. Yep.
Heard this title for for 3 or 4 months, and then all of a sudden Mo mentioned it, and I'm like, The Movement. Okay.
Excuse me for a moment.
Let's take a break with The Movement.
Okay, now review it.
Well, actually, the title pretty much sums it up, doesn't it?
This is going to be one of the more wishy-washy reviews for me. I don't know. I like some of the concepts in it. I wasn't super keen on Freddie Williams II's art. It's kind of Barth Searsy. It's a bit jumbled. Not much for his layouts. Find his pages a bit crowded. I like some of the concepts of the book. We just get a bit of a taste of who these characters are. They are all new characters except for one, I think. One I'm told is from, it was in the Secret Six book that Gail Simone did pre-New 52, but I never read the book, so I don't know which one that is. Mostly new characters. And I sort of like it. Sort of feels like every other Gail Simone book for me, which, sorry, Matt, always kind of leaves me a bit ho-hum. So I don't know. I think I want to try another, a second issue. I might even try a whole arc to see if I get to like these characters or not.
I guess I'll go next because I think I've already given a hint of what I'm thinking. God, this book sucked. The characters' faces are very cartoony, and yet you have a very dark art style outside of that. It's odd. It's just a jumbled mess. Very annoying to me that, why is it, here's another book where there's a bunch of kids, you know, the teenagers and their kids. They're just so much wiser and smarter than all the adults. I'm like, I just think it sucked. I really wish I could nail it any better than that. But sometimes you're reading a book and you're just going, God, this sucks. You know what? I thought this one sucked. Chris?
I liked it, actually. I'm definitely in for number two. I understand the criticisms. It is definitely a first issue. We get very little other than the introductions to these characters. I'm hoping this is going somewhere, and I'm kind of interested to see how this book is going to fit into the rest of the DC universe, because on the face of it, I don't think it fits at all. I'm interested seeing how things play out a little bit. That said, if something spectacular doesn't happen by issue three, I'm probably dropping out of the book real quick. Brett?
Well, I do agree with, is it Freddie Williams the second?
Yeah,
I do agree with that. Like, I think that his art is good, but the problem is that I thought it was completely wrong for the book. Mm-hmm. There was just nothing in there where I was just like, oh, hey, this art totally matches this. No, does not match the book at all to me. I have the same problem with Gail Simone on a consistent level with this book as I do with virtually everything that I've read by her. There's a part of me when I'm reading it, and the same thing happened with Batgirl, where I just like it. There's a part of me that just kind of likes the way it reads. But then there's never a hook. Like Batgirl, when I think I'm getting a hook, it just kind of misses the mark, and then I'm just like, yeah, okay, I'm not going to read it. In this case, by the time, you know, I was up and down, by the time the end rolled around, I was more up than down. So I can definitely see that I would read more of it, but I think the art could turn me off quickly. And overall, like Chris said, if something doesn't happen by issue three, I would be easy. This would be an easy drop for me.
Brett, let's talk about 10 grand.
10 grand. All right. Joe Straczynski and Ben Templesmith. I love Ben Templesmith's art. Now here's a case where the art and the story actually match perfectly. I love the concept of what Joe Straczynski is trying to do with this comic line, is just tell, you know, different types of stories in however long they last, whether they do a second arc or whatever doesn't really matter. But you know, it's interesting to see how that's gonna. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out. I like the book overall. I just didn't love the book. The character was interesting, and I think that Straczynski did a good job of making a pretty not-so-nice guy interesting and relatable and giving him something. But at the end of the day, I will probably be back for a second issue. But, you know, there was just something there that kind of lacked for me.
Chris?
I miss Hellblazer. This is definitely a John Constantine type character. I love the book. The art is spectacular. I have no hesitations in recommending this book. However long Joe wants to do this book, I'm buying this book. Very excited. Loved it.
Now, Chris, I think to at least some degree there, you summed up certainly what I was thinking, and I think what a lot of people are thinking, this really feels like like Straczynski wanted to play with certain characters that already existed, so he just created those characters for himself and did what he wanted with them. And of course, you mentioned Constantine, that's the obvious one, right? I like what Temple Smith's art is here too. I like his art always, and his style has changed slightly. He's altered it to fit this storyline. I think he did a really nice job. I would love to know when Brian Michael Bendis started ghostwriting for Straczynski, because there's a scene that takes place at a cafe that I think lasts 87 pages where it's just two people talking. It's pretty boring, this story. It's, like I say, it's not terribly original. Not much happens. It's just, I don't want to read this. Keith?
I get you on the cafe scene. It's like 3 pages, but
it's 3 pages with a hell of a lot of dialogue.
But it's excellent dialogue.
No, it's not.
It is. I didn't like the dialogue in that scene at all. It almost put me off the book. The dialogue in that scene, because it felt a bit like I'm like Straczynski coming through with complaining about young people today and their grammar.
Neil Adams write this for them?
No, it didn't have that many words.
At least you don't say like. it's no Batman Odyssey. Once it got out of that scene, actually, I really settled into the book, and I really liked it. A lot of the dialogue and text heavy stuff dropped. Temple Smith's layout opened up. It got into the demonic stuff, and I think that's really where it kind of hit its stride. I'm definitely in for this book. I really like Temple Smith's art.
You know what? I think that's one of the issues I had with it, is I felt there should be some more mystery as to the villain and his background with the lead character, and how is it that he's around. I felt like they gave away too much. They didn't build enough mystery for me. It just, I just think it missed its potential.
I love that he goes to talk to the angel in the strip joint. That was fun.
That was fun. I like that
part. That was a funny scene.
I dug it.
All right. Well, that's the end of our Wii views for this week. Just a small week again. So we'll end off with my tiny little interview with Phil Lamar, although he was a wonderful, wonderful gentleman. But you know, Chris, why don't you give us your going out.
All right, I'm Chris _ We Talk on Twitter. Don't hesitate to contact any of us. And if you've got a suggestion for a coming comic book attractions, please tweet me. Let me know what favorite comic book movies you like, love, hate. I'll watch them, I'll remember them, and we'll all have a little bit of fun with that.
Brett, you go next.
Okay, well, I'm Brett _ We Talk, and you know, it was great. We did have a chance to, as you heard, we talked to Bryce Carlson about the All Ages, so I'll probably have some new stuff to put in from Boom into the All Access All Ages on Comicosity, but otherwise, you know, there's lots of fun stuff.
Yeah, I just want to say how much fun I had at the Expo this weekend. Generally, much better run than previous years. I'm Mo _ We Talk to go along with Chris _ We Talk, and of course Brett _ We Talk. I want to say happy birthday to our friend turning 40 over there, Keith. That's why it'll be his chance to go out. That's my 40th birthday gift to you, Keith, is that you get to be the last guy talking on the show. ComicsWeTalkPodcast.com, of course, is the email if you want to get a hold of us that way as well. John Carpenter was a very, very nice man, I have to say. Who wasn't at all creeped out by listening me asking him and telling him, I'm not planning to rob you, I'm just wondering where you keep your Oscar. And he didn't know. Yeah, other than that, not much else to say. Some more stuff from the convention over at is going to be happening at We Talk Wrestling as well, with interviews with Edge and Bret Hart. So, Keith.
Okay. Thanks for this wonderful gift, Mo.
I didn't even wrap it.
It was take advantage.
No need. You can follow me on Twitter, Cub Reporter K. And we did talk to a lot of local comic creators, web comic creators, etc. We were recruiting for the Comic Book Summit. The Comic Book Summit was so successful last year, we definitely want to do it again and expand it. It was fantastic to hear a couple of guys who have appeared on the Comic Book Summit in December that said that they have listened to the show. Ryan actually said he's listened to it 4 times, which was really cool. It was such a fun podcast to do and cool that they got so much out of it. So we're definitely looking at Chris Peterson and more to add to that team. And with that, we are OUT.
I'm here with Phil Lamar, voice of, well, every character in the world, and also frequent Twitterer. I've noticed that your Twitter feed is excellent, and you talk a lot to Gail Simone. I just noticed that. But so let's see now. If there was, you work seemingly constantly. You know, is it caffeine or is there something else that keeps you going?
Well, the great thing about animation is it always seems like a lot more work than it requires because there's so many people doing it. I mean, as a voice actor, I'm basically a third to a half of the character. I do the voice, you know, and that gives the animators who and the writers, you know, they all collaborate in there, and there are hundreds of them, you know, so my contribution probably gets a little more attention than it might, but they're the ones that make it seem like I'm doing so much, you know, because they turn it into half an hour of entertainment.
Now, I heard Chris Rock say that, you know, he basically goes out, says 2 lines, and then he gets paid $1 million. So is it like that for you?
No. That's what happens if you're Chris Rock. I'm trying to think. No, not even Mike Myers. It's funny because he said that. It's like, well, you know, Mike Myers actually has to do a character. He actually has to do a voice. And he doesn't get paid $1 million. Actually, Chris doesn't get paid $1 million. He gets paid a significant amount. And when they don't have that significant amount, then they come to me to do Chris Rock.
Excellent. So now, if there was a character on Futurama that was a human, which one would you punch?
There are many humans on Futurama.
Yes, but if they were an actual human.
Oh, Zoidberg. But that's just because there's so much bad blood between Hermes and Zoidberg.
And then which one would you hug?
Leela, because she's cute.
Excellent. So now I have a question from my son that I'm supposed to ask you. If you could smell your brain, what would it smell like?
You could smell your brain, what would it smell like? Noodles.
Noodles. That's very good. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I really appreciate it.